My first story this morning, though, and it's a story of wait times for ambulances. Kerry, among one of the worst counties, waiting the longest times for ambulances. There has been criticism of the system. There's been resource problems in terms of the number of ambulances, the number of paramedics that the service is able to hire and employ. But one particular story is that of Brendan Murphy from Port McGee. He had an accident on a ladder, had a traumatic leg injury as a result. And you can see, and he's given us permission to show a picture of the severity of the injury, just to underline the situation he was in. When this happened in early June, no ambulance available for him. Eventually, the helicopter had to come 3 hours before a emergency response vehicle, which had a paramedic in it, attended the scene, had to come from West Kerry in relation to that. I asked Brendan and told him to tell me what had happened.
Yeah, I was up in a ladder. It was a double steel ladder. It was one of the ones with a pin on the side, and you shove up one half of it up along the other half and you clip in a pin, and I'd have done it several times, and I'd be going up into the mother's attic. She passed away 3 weeks ago, but I was just moving stuff in the house and that and doing a few bits of jobs and went up, taking things for granted. Thought I had, I shoved up the ladder, thought I'd put across the pin, which I had the clip. So I went up and I was up in the top of the ladder and I was halfway into the attic when the ladder just suddenly half it came down. I hadn't time to think, wink or blink, and my feet hit the wall coming down. I got thrown back, and then one of my legs, as far in as the knee, got caught in one of the rungs of the ladder, and the other half came down on top of it. And there I was, trapped in the ladder, upside down, totally disorientated, didn't know where I was. And then after a while, when I just managed to look upside down, look at my leg, and the skin, about a foot of it, flapped down the other way, and I'm looking at clear bone. And
yeah,
I was caught, the leather was caught on a radiator at the back, and there was a bed up against that as well, so I couldn't move the leather out anymore or anything. I had one leg trapped in it, the other leg was out to the left of the leather. And then basically what I had to do was to do a pull up on the leather with the leg that was inside in the leather, to straighten myself up with all the weight pulling up. And then I cut on with my left hand of the ladder, and I tried to use my right hand to pull up the other half of the ladder, and using my left leg to kick the wall to kind of dance the ladder out from the wall. But it took me about 20 minutes to do this, and I was absolutely in agony. There was blood coming to the left and the right, and my main thing was, oh God, I've hit an artery or a vein, I'm in serious trouble. But something remarkable happened there as well. A calmness came over me. It was very hard to describe. And I felt there was, people to my right. No, there wasn't anyone there, but I felt there was people to my right kind of beckoning me to come this way with the ladder. And I thought about it after, and if I had gone left with the ladder, there was a window right there, and I'd had gone out through the window.
Oh, Jesus.
If I had brought the ladder that way. But I know I was roaring in pain. But it took a good 20 minutes for me to get off that ladder and make my way downstairs then to the ground floor to try and gather myself. And then it was, of course, I had a touch phone then, and I was trying to operate the touch phone. Could not operate the phone for a good while. And then the last number that I eventually came across was a sister of mine, a nurse, but she happened to be in Tralee Hospital that day herself. And then I eventually got in to the keypad to call 999. And I suppose I was on the phone to that lady for about half an hour on the phone. And I did have to say to her, I said, will you be honest with me, please? I said, is there an ambulance on the way to me? And the poor woman, she didn't want to say no. She'd have loved to have said yes. But she said, look, it is logged, but there is nothing as far as Tralee yet. Oh, God, I said.
You were in Port McGee, so
I'm
you had
Port
called,
McGee, yeah.
And obviously you put the call in for an ambulance straight away. You're talking to her for half an hour, and she says, the call is logged, but we have no ambulance anywhere between here, where you are, and Tralee at the moment.
Yeah, so I said to her then, please, I said, do you mind if I go now, and I have to make another phone call? Because I said, I am in serious trouble, and she said, do make that call, but come back to me again. So I did that, and the next time I rang the phone, my sister's phone, she answered, and I said, oh, thank God. And I asked her, look, will you make a few phone calls for me, please? I'm in a bit of bother. So she got the neighbour down the road for me, and my brother Kieran in town, he came out as well. He was working. And the two of them came to me, but I had my leg up on the table this stage because I was afraid that any movement or anything, that an artery or a vein, I could nick it. So I left it up on the table, and I was standing on the other leg, and they stayed with me then. And I asked one of them to get a sheet, to go upstairs to get a sheet, just to cut off the blood supply if it did start bleeding. So they were making phone calls frantically for me as well. And then I say Dr. Donovan as well, he started ringing, and boss, he was ringing the emergency service as well, and he said, lads, someone will have to get that to him because this is life or death. And it was 3 hours basically before I made a first call until someone medically came to me then. So
3 hours.
3 hours before, there was a guy, he was over in Dingle, he had to come all the way from Dingle in a jeep, a medical jeep. And he came anyway.
So this is one of the, I think this is what you call an emergency response vehicle. It can't transport anybody anywhere, but it's equipped to provide first aid, paramedic support to someone wherever they are.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
And he was a lovely guy, beautiful guy, and he actually knew my father. My father, God rest him, but he actually knew my father. It's amazing the wounds would meet, and
yeah,
he looked at it, and he said, he said, yeah. He said, I think I'm going to have to call in a helicopter for you. So,
because the injury was so severe, and I've seen pictures of it, and you would be worried about, number one, loss of blood, number two, possible loss of the leg, given the extent of the damage that was done. So you were uncertain. So he said, look, I'm going to have to call in a helicopter.
Yeah, he looked at it, and I said to me, I said, you can be... There's no need to be beating around the bush with me. I said, I've been looking at that for 20 minutes upside down, and I've seen the bone, you know, a good 12 inches of the bone. So he said, yeah. He said, we're going to have to try. But he said, we may get a helicopter, we may not. He said, if someone then maybe has a heart attack or something else as well, you know, they could be delayed or anything. But thankfully, the helicopter was coming from another emergency. They were out for two emergencies that day. They actually landed and came. And they hadn't enough juice to go to Cork with me, because your man recommended I go to Cork because I'd probably have to ski and grafts and that. But they carried me to Tralee, but I was absolutely delighted above in Tralee. I think it was a Dr. Boyd was his name. I don't know, was Martin his first name. Absolutely brilliant. And he brought in a Sudanese guy and another lady. I don't know if she's from India. They were the two that were going to be working on me. And he went through X, Y, and Z, nights and fast. Lovely guy. He cracked a joke with me and that, and he said, you're in safe hands. And I said to him, I think I am. I said, with the way you're talking, I said, God bless you. And yeah, the two that walked on me, they walked on me over an hour and a half maybe. They were brilliant, but there was a lot of pulling and dragging of the skin, and they had to, we'll say, attach onto the bone again, the flesh onto the bone, and then clean it and whatnot, and then staple outside as well. But I have absolutely admiration for everyone, even the ones that answer the calls and everything. You can feel the empathy, you know, with them, and
yeah,
the emotion as well with them. They do their damnedest for all of us.
They do a good job, yeah.
They do a damn good job, and God bless each and every one of them. But, like, I hate, even my worst enemy now, I would hate anything, you know, for anyone to be in pain or anything. But I wonder if the Minister of Health was like that, trapped in the leather down here and that, would he have a different perspective on the way we are being treated down here in parts of Kerry? And maybe people are being treated all over Ireland that way. Health is your wealth. And when you're trapped on something and you're looking at life or death, not a bad, you know, not an easy place to be.
No, certainly not, Brendan. Certainly not. Take your time.
Yeah. But, I just wonder, like, we're all human beings. Yeah, we're all different. But I remember when my mother was dying 3 weeks before it, She got pneumonia and whatnot, and myself and my lovely sister Deirdre, and all of us looking after the mother. But when she had, when we had given her the morphine, even after so many times of the morphine, she started getting sick and coughing, uncontrollable coughing. And when we rang that Thursday night for a doctor, there was no doctor. And apparently, three nights, I think, out of the week, we have no doctor. So, can you imagine looking at your dying mother? She coughing, throwing up, and no doctor on South Dock for us.
Yeah.
And we had to go through the process there then as well of, you know, went through Killarney, and the doctor there was absolutely fabulous on the phone as well. And only for my sister having been a nurse, they allowed her to give the injection. But the problem was then there was no chemist open. So I rang my friend Shane, the chemist, all care in Castlevane, fabulous guy. And I know the other chemist does it as well. They have to open up. They open up in an emergency, 9:30.
Yeah.
That way we were able to get the injection. But I was just wondering there, a simple thing. Why is it not possible that they cannot put a nurse into the vehicle when there's no doctor on call?
Yeah.
The nurse would be able to prescribe the injection.
Yeah. Something for support in rural areas where, you know, it's not easy to access medicine at emergency, out of hours time, shall we call it that. I know there was figures out for, I think it was 2021, the latest figures, and it showed that about 30 occasions that year it had taken an ambulance more than an hour to reach a patient in Kerry in need of urgent assistance. That was figures from the National Ambulance Service that kind of show that Kerry is among the worst affected counties when it comes to ambulance response times. And we've had changes made in the last 10 years or so to a dynamic deployment system where ambulances aren't stationed in individual places, but they would kind of roam around and drive around. But they are being caught in the emergency services pressure in our departments, whereby it takes a long time for somebody to hand over a patient when an ambulance arrives, and they could be an hour waiting to hand over a patient because there's no beds available in the ED. And that's, I'm not saying that's an excuse, but that's the reality of the reason as to why our ambulances aren't available. And perhaps maybe part of the reason why you waited so long, Brendan,
yeah,
on your particular occasion.
Yeah, the following day, I was reliably informed the ambulance here for South Kerry was over in Guernsey, in a place in Cork where they have that cable car.
Yeah.
So the ambulance for here was over there. So I don't know what is happening. Does it happen in the minister's constituency?
What the ambulance service says is that, look, ambulances may travel to and from and be dispatched from various locations irrespective of their base, as they're not confined to work in geographical areas. The current model is designed around international best practice and has eliminated previous practice where the nearest ambulance was not always dispatched due to former legacy boundaries. That's what they're saying about the system they have. But if you don't have a fluid system at our emergency departments and maybe enough ambulances, I don't know, then I suppose you're going to run into these problems. If there's three or four ambulances parked up outside University Hospital Kerry or CUH waiting for an hour or two to transfer a patient, that's why we run into these problems, I suppose.
I suppose so, but I was is it my memory or not, but I can remember years and years ago we had no problems whatsoever with ambulances or anything. They'd be there too rapidly. And now we have more money. We have, is it 16 billion or something in tax in our coffers? Just floating in at the moment. No, that won't be the same every year, I know that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many times I've been in Tralee Hospital and to see the staff, the sweat is rolling off those lovely men and women. They're running and racing. And I think, this is my own thinking, I think they are worth a lot more money than what the minister is worth anyway, but that's only my own point of view. I do that think so, because they're the ones saving lives, they're the ones being distressed on the end of the phone themselves and doing anything and everything to try and get an ambulance to a person. But I certainly do not think it's acceptable for anyone else. I'm okay about myself. I leave myself out of the equation. I'm a single man and widow. I don't care about myself really to the extent, but what I'm worried about is the next man or woman that would be trapped in the ladder or in the car, or some mother and father that have a young family. Can the minister really stand over that and say, look, we're in a bit of a spot of a bother, but we'll see what we can do, because this spot of bother, I think, is going on for a long, long time.
Okay. Well, Brendan, look, thanks for sharing your story this morning, and thanks for talking to us about it. We'll try and get some answers for you.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
There you go. That's Brendan Murphy with us there on the line, telling us her his story and his story of waiting for 3 hours before any sort of ambulatory support came. He had a GP there, thankfully. He had assistance from neighbours and family. But as you can see the picture, and look, we're getting a bit of stick over the picture in terms of like the graphic nature of it. But Brendan gave us permission to post it. And the reason why we posted it was to underline the seriousness of the injury that he suffered in the context of the response that we got from the National Ambulance Service. And here is that response. We put it to them, look, that Brendan was there for 3 hours before any sort of a response came, ended up having to be helicoptered. What was the situation? What went wrong on the day? And the Ambulance Service says, at times when we're experiencing very high demand for 999 services for patients with immediately life-threatening injuries and illnesses, unfortunately means that some patients have longer waits. Every day, the National Ambulance Service deploys approximately 160 to 180 emergency ambulances, an average of 22 rapid response vehicles, and an excess of 50 officer response vehicles operating from over 100 locations around the country. Not all 999 calls for ambulances are emergencies, and response times targets, which set out in the HSE's National Service Plan, apply to ECHO, life-threatening cardiac or respiratory arrest, or Delta, life-threatening illness or injury, other than cardiac arrest calls only. As demand can exceed available resources, 999 calls are clinically triaged and prioritised to ensure that the patients with life-threatening injuries or conditions receive the fastest possible response. If a 999 call is not time-critical, then during busy periods, these calls will wait longer for a response. Thankfully, it remains the case that the majority of 999 calls do not relate to life-threatening emergencies. The HSE cannot comment on individual cases. The HSE welcomes the opportunity to engage with service users to understand their experience and see if an opportunity for service improvement exists. In this regard, the HSE encourages any service users who wish to discuss their experience to contact the HSE directly through Your Service, Your Say. So what they're saying there is that it was okay for Brendan to wait for 3 hours with the traumatic leg injury that he had, and I don't know how he didn't pass out or how he didn't go into cardiac arrest given the severity of it, particularly at his age, that sort of an injury, to have to wait in that level of pain for 3 hours. I just don't understand it. And I understand the point they're making. We have to go to people who are having heart attacks. We have to go to people who can't breathe. We have to have people who are life-threatening injuries. It's a very fine line for me with the level of severity of that injury. And it doesn't explain, and just calling it a busy period doesn't explain why he had to wait for 3 hours. We're not talking about an hour here. We're not talking about an hour and a half. We're talking about 3 hours. And I'd like to know, and they say they can't comment on it, I'd like to know from the HSE, from the ambulance service, what were the other calls on that day? What was the wider picture of what was happening in our ambulance service? Who was being transported where for what reason? To try and see what the triaging was like, if they thought that Brendan's leg was grand, given he was so far away from hospital. And they thought, you'll have to wait. It just baffles me anyway. If you have a view on that, get in touch with us in the programme. And notwithstanding that, and it was great to hear Brendan talk so glowingly and so well about the service he got when he got to hospital, and the brilliant expertise from all sorts of people from all corners of the world who work in our health service and provide that expertise. When you get into the hospital and when you get into getting care, it's world class. The problem is getting an ambulance, getting through emergency departments and all of those particular problems. And that's the problem that doesn't ever seem to be solved by our managers. If you have a view, get in touch. On the way, call from the Dáil.